Today is Wednesday, June 9th, and you are listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, President Biden heads to the U.K. and Europe on his first trip abroad.
The White House says Biden wants to work closely with America's Democratic allies in the United Kingdom and Europe.
Plus, desperate times for survivors of Burkina Faso rebel massacre.
Newly displaced, mostly children and women, have been arriving in desperate straits.
Also, growing threats to the world's oceans ecosystems. Our top story today is in the U.S. President Joe Biden is heading to the United Kingdom and Europe on his first trip abroad, sending a signal that his administration values close transatlantic relationships as it deals with challenges such as emerging from the COVID-19 pandemic, climate change, and threats from China and Russia. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
On Monday, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg visited the White House, where he said President Joe Biden will be welcomed in Europe with open arms.
No other major power has so many friends and allies as the United States has in NATO. So I look forward to welcoming President Biden to Brussels.
The White House says Biden wants to work closely with America's Democratic allies in the United Kingdom and Europe to face challenges such as threats and unfair competition from Russia and China.
At the US-EU summit, the President and European Union leaders will focus on aligning our approaches to trade and technology so that democracies, and not anyone else, not China or other autocracies, are writing the rules for trade and technology for the 21st century.
But foreign policy expert Brian Katulis says that regarding China, America's interests may not align with those of its European allies.
Countries looking at the rise of China and its growth in the economy, looking at its technology and what it has to offer, and looking for ways to maintain ties with the United States, but also build ties with China. So countries like Germany, I think, will continue to hedge in a certain extent, not see eye to eye entirely with the United States.
Katulis says Biden will seek to highlight the common values that the United States and Europe share and that Russia and China do not.
This is his first trip as U.S. president. And I think going to the other center of sort of global democracies, Europe, is an important feature of this. And the multilateral meetings are important. But then some of the key bilateral meetings to watch, I think, would be the ones with UK Prime Minister, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson, as well as the Turkish leader Erdogan.
Biden's first talks will be with British Prime Minister Boris Johnson, host of the G7 summit. Then he heads to Brussels for EU and NATO summits, leading up to talks next week in Geneva with Russian President Vladimir Putin. He has promised to pressure both China and Russia on human rights abuses. Mark Simakovsky is with the Atlantic Council.
So Biden and the administration want to showcase that America is back and that we can build back together to counter some of the most significant challenges that we face globally, like climate change, like COVID response, like dealing with great power competition with Russia and China. So this administration, I think, knows it needs allies.
Simakovsky and other experts say the U.S. is now entering a new phase on COVID-19, where it is turning its attention to helping the rest of the world come out of the deadly pandemic by sharing life-saving vaccines. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Security has been beefed up in the small English seaside town of Cabiz Bay for the first day of the G7 summit on Wednesday. Police closed off roads and advised the public to avoid the area hosting the event. Police and security personnel were patrolling steel fences around the venue on Wednesday morning. An extra 5,000 officers were drafted in to help the operation, with about 6,500 officers and staff involved altogether. The first in-person meeting of the leaders of the major developed economies for nearly 2 years is taking place in Cornwall, on the tip of southwestern England, with a focus on the COVID-19 pandemic and climate change. In a rare bipartisan vote, the U.S. Senate on Tuesday voted 68-32 to approve a sweeping package of legislation intended to boost the country's ability to compete with Chinese technology, as Congress increasingly seeks to take a tough line against Beijing. The measure authorizes about $190 billion for provisions to strengthen U.S. technology and research, and would separately approve spending about $50 billion to increase U.S. production and research into semiconductors and telecommunications equipment. The bill must pass the House of Representatives to be sent to the White House for President Joe Biden to sign into law. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer.
This bill could be the turning point for American leadership in the 21st century. And for that reason, this legislation will go down as one of the most significant bipartisan achievements of the U.S. Senate in recent history. Around the globe, authoritarian governments believe that squabbling democracies like ours can't unite around national priorities. They believe that democracy itself is a relic of the past, and that by beating us to emerging technologies, they, many of them autocracies, will be able to reshape the world in their own image. Well, let me tell you something. I believe they are wrong.
That's Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken on Tuesday told the Senate committee he anticipates that even if Iran and the United States return to compliance with the nuclear deal, hundreds of U.S. sanctions on Tehran will remain in place.
We're engaged in indirect conversations with Iran about the possibility of a mutual return to compliance with the nuclear agreement, the so-called JCPOA. And we don't know at this stage whether Iran is willing and able to do what it would need to do to come back into compliance. So we'll see if that actually materializes. Were that to happen, our responsibility would be to lift sanctions inconsistent with the JCPOA, but to resolutely maintain sanctions that are consistent with it to deal with the multiplicity of Iran's malign actions in a whole series of areas. And I would anticipate that even in the event of a return to compliance with the JCPOA, hundreds of sanctions would remain in place, including sanctions imposed by the Trump administration. If they are not inconsistent with the JCPOA, they will remain unless and until Iran's behavior changes.
That's U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken. The Treasury Department has asked law enforcement authorities to investigate the disclosure of tax records cited in a media report that showed that some of America's richest people paid little to no income taxes. U.S. media outlet ProPublica said it obtained, quote, a vast trove of Internal Revenue Service data on the tax returns of thousands of the nation's wealthiest people covering more than 15 years, unquote. The data indicated that billionaires, including Amazon founder Jeff Bezos and Tesla founder Elon Musk, paid no federal income taxes during some years. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said that, quote, any unauthorized disclosure of confidential government information, unquote, is illegal.
So obviously we take it very seriously. I'm not going to comment on specific unauthorized disclosures of confidential government information. I can tell you that broadly speaking, we know that there is more to be done to ensure that corporations, individuals who are at the highest income are paying more of their fair share.
That's White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki. Taliban insurgents killed at least 10 Afghans working for an agency clearing landmines in an attack on their camp in the north of the country, Interior Ministry spokesperson Tariq Ayan said on Wednesday. Emily Wither of Reuters reports.
A mine workers' camp in northern Afghanistan was attacked in the night. The Halo Trust said in a statement that an unknown armed group killed at least 10 of its Afghan staff. More than a dozen people were wounded. The agency said there were 110 workers at the camp, and an official said that most of the survivors fled to nearby villages. The Interior Ministry said the gunmen were Taliban insurgents, though the group denied involvement. After decades of conflict, Afghanistan is strewn with mines and unexploded ordnance. Agencies have been working to clear them in the years since the Taliban were ousted in 2001. The Taliban frequently attack demining workers because, government officials say, the workers often help to defuse roadside bombs that insurgents have planted.
That's Emily Wither of Reuters. Facebook's recent decision to ban former President Donald Trump for 2 years sends a message to world leaders that Facebook is stepping up its role as sheriff on its service. Tina Trent reports.
They may allow me back.
With Donald Trump suspended from Facebook for 2 years, experts say the social media company is sending a message to world leaders and public figures that Facebook will no longer give them preferential treatment when their speech breaks its rules.
What it means for other world leaders is they're not going to be treated differently solely based on their status as world leaders.
Along with Trump's suspension, Facebook rolled out a new policy saying it'll crack down on any world leaders' postings that could lead to harm or violations of its community standards. Previously, Facebook would leave content from public figures up, arguing that there was a public interest, even when that content violated its policies. Some critics say that the guidelines are still too vague and a 2-year suspension of Trump too light, and sends a message that the door to Facebook is always open, even for serious offenders.
The fact that they're leaving this as a suspension means that the other world leaders are on pause too, a little bit, right? That means that maybe, just maybe, they may have an opportunity to continue.
Facebook says public figures who eventually return will face increased penalties for repeat offenses, ranging from 1 month to 2 years. Only cases deemed extreme will result in permanent suspension.
It doesn't matter who you are. You can be the Pope, the Queen of England, the President of the United States. You cannot use our services, and I hope most people would think this is reasonable, to aid, abet, foment, or praise acts of violence.
While the company has set up an independent oversight board to review its content moderation decisions, some experts contend that the oversight board itself is a deflection.
My sense is that they're using that as a way to deflect from more serious issues around, you know, what their algorithms are doing to spread certain kinds of information.
If the internet has come a long way in the last 25 years, shouldn't internet regulations too?
Over the past year, Facebook executives have called for government to play a larger role in determining the rules of the internet.
American democracy does not belong to Silicon Valley. It belongs to the American people. And the people who should set the rules for how American democracy plays out and where the line should be drawn on what speech is and is not acceptable shouldn't be private companies.
While Facebook will look more critically at world leader speech, what's certain is that the scrutiny of Facebook itself won't let up anytime soon. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
The UN Refugee Agency says survivors of the Saturday massacre in a Burkina Faso village are in desperate need of humanitarian aid. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Unidentified gunmen attacked the village of Sohal in Burkina Faso's northeast Sahel region on June 5th. They reportedly stormed the village in the middle of the night, executing at least 138 civilians, seriously injuring nearly 40 other people, and setting houses and a market ablaze. The UN Refugee Agency says more than 3,300 people have fled for their lives to nearby villages. UNHCR spokesman Baba Baluch says the newly displaced, mostly children and women, have been arriving in desperate straits. He says they have few or no belongings and need everything.
The new arrivals urgently need water and sanitation, shelter essentials, aid items, and medical care. Authorities have delivered almost 400 tons of food and thousands of relief items, while UNHCR and partners are providing medical care and psychosocial support.
The attack, the deadliest since 2015, highlights the increasing insecurity and violence that has been gaining a foothold in Africa's Sahel region over the past few years. The UNHCR calls Burkina Faso the fastest growing displacement and protection crisis in the world. Since 2019, the agency says violence in the country has forced more than 1.2 million people to flee their homes. Baluch says so far this year, violence has displaced some 150,000.
84% either women who face a high risk of gender-based violence or children, half of whom have reportedly been subjected to physical violence and abuse. In addition to the IDPs, Burkina Faso continues to generously host more than 22,000 refugees and asylum seekers, mostly from Mali.
The UNHCR is appealing for more generous support from the international community. It says the available funds cannot keep pace with the growing humanitarian needs in the hugely insecure Sahelian region. It notes only a quarter of the nearly $260 million required to assist Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger this year has been received. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is the Voice of America. European Union lawmakers have approved a new coronavirus travel certificate that is aimed at opening the 27-nation bloc up for the summer. Currently, traveling across the bloc is difficult for tourists, airlines, and authorities because restrictions and regulations differ from country to country. But beginning on June 1st, EU nations will recognize the approved vaccine certificate. The Albanian parliament has impeached President Ilir Meta for violating the constitution. In an extraordinary session, the parliament voted 104-7 to discharge the president, but the final approval for removing Meta will come from Albania's constitutional court within 3 months. A parliamentary investigation concluded that Meta had violated the constitution with what investigators said was a biased approach against the ruling socialists during the April 25th parliamentary election campaign. Meta, whose post is largely ceremonial and apolitical, accused Prime Minister Edi Rama of concentrating all legislative, administrative, and judicial powers in his hands. A Moscow court is considering a request by prosecutors to outlaw the organization founded by Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny. That's part of authorities' efforts to muzzle critics ahead of a crucial parliamentary election in September. The Moscow City Court on Wednesday is expected to grant prosecutors' request to designate Navalny's foundation for fighting corruption and its sprawling network of regional offices across Russia as extremist organizations. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu for broadcasting from Washington, D.C. As it marks World Ocean Day, the World Meteorological Organization warns the continued rise of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere is threatening the ecosystems of the world's oceans. Again, Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Carbon dioxide, the primary greenhouse gas emitted from human activities, is the key driver of global warming. Scientists say CO2 emissions hang around in the atmosphere for a very long time, from 300 to 1,000 years. WMO spokeswoman Claire Nullis says because of this long lifetime, rising emissions of CO2 will have a profound impact on future generations.
Not just talking about one or two, we're talking about many generations will be committed to seeing more impacts of climate change. So that means rising temperatures, more extreme weather, melting ice, rising sea level, and all the associated impacts.
The ocean absorbs around 23% of the annual atmospheric emissions of carbon dioxide and acts as a buffer against climate change. Latest data from the Atmospheric Monitoring Station in Hawaii, the Mauna Loa Observatory, find a considerable rise in CO2 emissions in May compared to those in previous years. Nullis says this is causing ocean acidification, a phenomenon that will have a very serious impact on ocean ecosystems.
This has obviously a very damaging effect on marine ecosystem systems, coral reefs. The ocean also absorbs 90% of the excess heat from human activities, and as a result, ocean heat is at a record level, and large parts of the ocean are seeing heat waves every year.
A recent report by two UN agencies notes at least 25% of the world's live coral has been lost in the last three decades due to ocean acidification and marine heat waves. If the trend continues, the agencies warn it could lead to the loss of functional coral reef ecosystems around most of the world by mid-century. That has huge consequences as coral reefs provide essential habitat for 25% of all marine life, estimated at well over 1 million species. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Australia is facing renewed calls to introduce fresh sanctions on the military government in Myanmar to help free a Sydney academic. Sean Tono, an economic advisor to the Southeast Asian nation's ousted de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi, remains in prison after being arrested earlier this year. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Colleagues and associates regard Australian academic Sean Turnell as a devoted friend to the people of Myanmar. He grew up in Macquarie Fields, a working-class suburb of Sydney. His first job was at the Reserve Bank of Australia at age 19. He said his great passion was money and banking. He later became an academic at Macquarie University, specialising in research on the Myanmar economy. He's a professor of economics and the highly regarded author of Fiery Dragons, a history of the financial sector in Myanmar. He's also advised the United States Congress on the Southeast Asian nation. Turnell has been an advisor to various international agencies. His expertise and dedication caught the attention of Aung San Suu Kyi, the leader of Myanmar's National League for Democracy Party. Turnell has been a long-serving economic aide to Suu Kyi. Both were arrested following February's military takeover in Myanmar. They've reportedly been charged with breaking the country's official secrets law. Earlier this year, hundreds of academics signed a petition demanding his release, describing Turnell as the nicest human you will ever meet. His wife, Ha Vu, is also an academic at Macquarie University. She said she was distraught about his detention. His family said he'd fallen in love with Myanmar. The military crackdown against the pro-democracy movement is reported to have killed more than 800 people. Several thousand people have been arrested. Australia has been criticised for not doing enough to secure Turnell's release. The Australian Council for International Development, an umbrella organisation for international aid agencies, has said that while the United States, Britain, Canada and the European Union have imposed sanctions on senior Myanmar military officials since February, Canberra has not. Tim Harcourt, a friend of Turnell's and an economist at the University of Technology, Sydney, believes Turnell is being treated well in prison.
I understand that Sean's been able to talk to his wife and he's reasonably healthy and getting on well with all the guards and things, but obviously the legal situation's not real good.
There's been no comment from Australian Foreign Minister Maurice Payne. She has previously called for Turnell's release, describing him as a highly regarded member of the academic community in Australia. Myanmar, formerly known as Burma, was controlled by a repressive military government from 1962 to 2011. A government effectively led by Suu Kyi came to power after elections in 2015. Myanmar has a population of about 57 million people. It borders the Andaman Sea and the Bay of Bengal between Thailand and Bangladesh. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa has put his Minister of Health, Zweli Mzisi, on, quote, special leave, unquote, amid allegations his department improperly awarded COVID-19-related contracts to a company controlled by his former associates. David Doyle of Reuters has more.
South Africa's health minister was placed on special leave on Tuesday amid allegations of corruption linked to COVID-19-related contracts. Zweli Mkhize's department is accused of irregularly awarding the contracts to a communications company controlled by his former associates. It's the latest in a series of corruption allegations linked to coronavirus-related tenders that have caused public outrage. President Cyril Ramaphosa has vowed that corruption during the pandemic will be dealt with harshly. Ramaphosa's office said special leave would allow the minister to attend to allegations and investigations concerning the contracts. Before that statement, Mkhize apologised for the public rage over the allegations. South Africa's Minister of Tourism, Mameluke Kubayigobane, will serve as Acting Minister of Health until further notice.
That's David Doyle of Reuters. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great day.